Open the brackets, it's time for All Squared.
Welcome to All Squared. We are at the Maths Jam Conference 2013 in, I don't even know where I am, I'm in the Midlands, am I?
Yeah, just outside of Stone, in a place actually called Yarnfield.
Okay, that rings a bell. So I have, well, I'm here, Christian Perfect, Katie Seckles is also here.
As Hello. Usual,
that's standard for this podcast, but also we have Colin Wright and Matt Parker, who Hello. Respectively...
Hello.
Organise the annual conference and the first monthly one and some more.
I'm vaguely associated with the whole thing for historical reasons.
I think Matt is responsible for Maths Jam, but not in a way that suggests any responsibility.
Yes, yes, that's it.
And yet your name comes up perpetually when people mention Maths Jam.
I'm like
in various tones.
Yes.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. 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 And with other surrounding words, which I don't always appreciate. I'm more of a champion of Maths Jam, if we'll put it that way. Sorry.
Okay.
Maths Jam PR.
Sort of instigated the first one.
Yeah, I got the ball rolling and then convinced other people to keep pushing it along. Mm. That's pretty much. Yeah. And I one time convinced Brian Cox to tweet about it, and that was really boost.
Did anything come from that?
A lot of other tweets. And then, actually, what did it happen? Do we...
I think just everyone was tweeting about it for a while. It may have... There's no way to tell.
Really. I don't know,
it may
yeah.
have filtered through and created more attendance, but... I mean, Brian never turned up.
Jerk, honestly.
Yeah.
There's a surprise. Well, I'm sure he's got other things to do.
He's a busy guy. He's got stuff going on, isn't he?
Yeah. So, have you had a good conference this year?
It's been brilliant this year. I mean, it's been brilliant every year. This is number four. And every year it's been brilliant. It's been made brilliant by the delegates. The sheer volume of talks that we've had, each one really quite short. They've been largely sticking to the 5-minute time limit, so that's been fantastic. We had, I think, 51 or 52 talks on such a variety of topics. But the thing that's made it is the breaks between have been filled with people sharing puzzles and problems and questions and just cool stuff. And the people who come along are willing to play, they're willing to share, they're willing to show what they've done, what they find interesting. And that's what makes it work. And this year has been absolutely brilliant. Nearly 120 people, it's great.
Colin has been very strategic with the schedule, so deliberately long coffee breaks, which is nice. I think most of the conference then, you've got to race from place to place.
Yeah.
And actually, there's no racing from anywhere to anywhere because it's always in the one room, and there's no parallel sessions or any of that. Which is a great sense of community. You have lots of time for coffee, and you're with the same people, so everyone sees the same stuff.
Yeah. So we get everybody in the same room for 1 hour, and they get sort of 8 or 9 talks in that period. But then you get a half an hour to go away and talk about what you've seen or other stuff.
Right? We replenish the oxygen into the room.
Yep.
And then repeat.
Yeah, I mean, it's also not possible to rush around anywhere because you'll find that if you've given a talk or if you see someone that's given a talk or someone you know already, a lot of people know each other already from previous conferences and from other things, but you'll always end up running into someone who wants to start a conversation about something.
Yeah. So. The room is very viscous. It's high. You can't move at any pace through the...
It took me about 20 minutes to get to lunch today.
Yeah.
It's like the other end of the room.
It's like Higgs boson.
Yeah,
they sort of gather around the particles and slow you down as you go. These maths go... I don't know if it's the people who are the bosons or the conversations that are the bosons, but certainly stuff accretes around you and you find it harder and harder to move away.
Like barnacles.
In a good way.
Yeah.
Three analogies there, good work.
Yeah.
So we should explain the format of the Maths Jam weekend, really, just in case we didn't fully do it.
We kind of semi-have. Let's be a little bit more linear about it. So we start with lunch on the Saturday, although people often turn up early at sort of 10 or 11.
Before any of that, we're in a conference park in... I'm going to be in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
well, we're deliberately in the middle of nowhere.
Exactly.
Actually, when we first discussed having a Maths Jam conference, we thought, well, we could put it somewhere interesting. Loads of people involved work at universities where fascinating things happen. And there are some interesting cities in the UK. But we went, no, the point, we don't want to feel obliged to do anything else. And so we thought, what's the most boring, no offence to Stone, the wonderful people of Yarnfield, but there's nothing else to do here.
Actually, it was kind of self-selected, really, because we looked at lots of different venues where we could have it. But for the very first Maths Jam, we didn't know whether we were going to get 20 people or 200 people. Mm. We didn't know if we were going to need 10 rooms or 150 rooms. And every other venue just laughed at us when we said that, because they always insist on contracting for a certain number of rooms. But Yarnfield said, well, if you come on a weekend when we're already open, then it's okay. You know, we've got 380 rooms. Take as many as you need. So that was self-selecting, and we had 65 rooms, 80-something delegates, and it was that flexibility that brought us here to start with. We've been to other venues, but we're back in Yarnfield now. So, yes, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere here. Because, yeah, we start, as I say, sort of lunchtime, or people start arriving at 10 or 11 o'clock on the Saturday. And then we're still here. There are still other people here, and it's 3:30 in the afternoon on the Sunday. And we've been in the same venue talking about maths and puzzles and games the whole time. There is no time to go out and see anything else, so it would be a waste to put it somewhere.
Have you seen the rest of the site here?
I've seen some of it, right, but not much.
Because it used to be a BT training centre,
oh, yeah,
and so we can see the poles at one window.
Well, when we were here the first year, the first thing that happened when people turned up was they'd park in the car park, come past these telephone
totem-like
poles,
oh, yeah,
there, and then come and say, did you see, there's
guys
yeah, up the poles, because they're actually still
they're
training
practicing
people
practicing pole-based things.
Yeah, exactly.
But the rest of the building is a massive site, and occasionally, because it's BT, they go, you know, we're bored of this building now. And they abandon it. So there are loads of derelict abandoned. I was talking to one of the security guys. They didn't realize some people moved in to one of the old buildings. They still had power. They didn't turn the power off. And they started growing cannabis using, like, all the lights and everything draining their power. It took them 6 to 12 months,
to realize,
as far as they're aware, to realize they were there and get them kicked out.
Yeah. So the format, you know, we have people turning up then. But we start at with lunch. So we have a lunch in the venue. And then we started the talks at 2 o'clock. So the schedule this time round was from 2 till 3, we had an hour's worth of talks, so it was 9 talks. And then a half an hour's break, because at other conferences you often have to run from one place to another, but we had a half an hour break. And then we had another 1 hour of talks, and a half an hour break. Then another hour of talks, and a half an hour break, and then dinner. And then this time we actually had a guy who came and did a little something. He actually showed us a clock made of Lego, an absolutely amazing thing.
He's brilliant.
And he had a Lego plaiting machine and some other little devices, which was great. And it sort of sparked off more conversations and more playing with things and people talking about the other puzzles. There was last year at sort of 3:30 in the morning, somebody tweeted saying, there's no one left to play with. I have to go to bed. And it's pretty much the same this time around. People were still up at 4 o'clock, and then
I went to bed at 2.
Yeah, I went to bed a little earlier than that. But
people were still going at that point.
Absolutely. And then breakfast, and then we started again before 9, and nearly everybody turned up at 8:45. And we had basically the same schedule on the Sunday morning as we had on the Saturday afternoon.
What I like about Alex, the clock Lego clock guy,
yeah,
he's a purist. And so apparently some people will glue Lego pieces together.
Oh, no.
Exactly. Mm. Right, Alex is like, no. And also, he doesn't add any extra pieces. And so one of the hardest bits of doing this clock, I was talking to him afterwards, was finding the kind of cog that the escapement clicks over.
Yeah.
And all the standard ones didn't work. And what he found was the paddles from a pirate set. Like it's a
yeah,
weird part off a boat or so, or a ship or whatever that is able to then put in there, and the whole thing, it's all standard Lego pieces.
Wonderful.
It tells the time.
Wonderful.
I mean, I wandered past. It must have been at least an hour, if not two, after he'd finished doing his talk, and there were still people on the stage talking to him and looking at all of his things and playing with stuff.
Yeah, and that's what happens. Is the people start to cluster around something interesting, and then you get more being brought in, and then it breaks off, and it's just a huge soup of people doing stuff. And then the Sunday morning, you know,
viscous soup.
It's viscous soup. The Sunday morning has been brilliant. You know, we've again had another sort of 27 something or something talks, and then we have lunch, and then we've still got people here talking and playing and doing stuff. Most people have gradually drifted off because some people have considerable distances to go.
I think we can pretty much just take over this podcast now.
I think
we asked some questions to these guys. So, Katie, I couldn't help but notice more baked goods being at this particular
usual
mass jam. Yeah, because the usual is zero.
Yeah, we don't usually bake anything, but yeah, it was James Grimes' idea. He comes up with a lot of ideas.
I don't remember seeing James around.
No,
this,
well, he's not able to be here. So earlier in the year, we were kind of discussing things that we could do around Maths Jam just to make it a bit more, have some other stuff going on around it, I guess. Not that it's not already enough stuff, but it was, you know,
there were still some gaps just around the edges.
Yeah, we were feeling a bit, you know, not busy. So we kind of, James was thinking of different things to do. And we added in a few ideas, but then James turns out couldn't make it because he's away giving some talks in Norway, I think. But one of the ideas that he had was to do some kind of baking competition to say, you know, let's see what we can bake, but we should definitely judge the cakes on, among other criteria, how much maths is in them. So
was the original plan mathsiness and cakiness?
Yeah. I believe you can get like maths essence in a bottle now that you just drop it in.
I find
like vanilla,
the pure maths seed scraped out of the maths pods is better, but you can get the...
So we did kind of...
I'm sorry, are you actually joking about that?
Not entirely.
So we were, we kind of threw that together and suggested it in a couple of emails, and a few people got in touch to say they were going to bake something. A few people just started planning without telling me. Which is also fine. And then on the day we had I think 14 entries altogether.
I was amazed.
Yeah.
Because a bunch of us thought we'd bake some things and bring them along. So, but then people just started showing up going, brought a thing, got a cake.
And
yeah.
I feel
it's
really
phenomenal.
Bad about my entry because it was a complete failure.
Which one was yours?
It was the two circular cakes that were just white icing.
Oh, you did the ones where you had to cut it and different things happened.
Well, they were
yours came with like a reading list.
Yeah. Well, no, it was a whole explanation because you can't tell from looking at them what's meant to be going on. They're just like rubbish cakes. So I baked them and they were terrible. I bought them anyway, thinking, if hardly anyone brings a cake, it looks
exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. We appreciate that, but
as it turns out, we had some pretty ones.
Loads of people.
What Matt is not telling you is that he won one of the prizes.
And I should say before we go into this, right, that we did anonymous peer review of the cakes.
It was beyond scrupulously fair. The review process, I think.
The judges were randomly chosen and were not told who'd baked which cakes.
The cakes had random numbers assigned to them.
Yeah.
To avoid knowing whose was whose. But I didn't, I mean, the thing is, right, I didn't win the award for mathsiness.
No.
I didn't win the award for presentation. I won the award for deliciousness.
Ah.
Which, and you didn't even give me a book about baking.
No, well, we had three prizes. We had a baking prize and a maths prize and a aesthetics prize. And I got a book that was about baking and a book that was about maths and a book that was some pretty visuals. It was a book of M.C. Escher illustrations. But I thought if we gave the baking prize to the person who was best at baking, that's kind of a wasted effort.
It's redundant, isn't
it? Yeah, because they already are the best at baking, so they don't need...
No, but I won it, and I'm terrible at baking. I stood in Sainsbury's and I looked at the ingredients and went, what goes in a cake? So then I got my phone out and I looked up a basic cake algorithm. They call them recipes, apparently. And I found a generic vanilla-like cake, and I found one that had a few weird ingredients. It involved Greek yogurt. That's a winner. Right. And then I just followed the instructions exactly. I love measuring things step by step, and that was the cake.
I think that's essentially all that baking is. I think the more you get into it, the more you realise it's basically just science, but with food instead.
So no experimenting.
It's chemistry you can eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as long as you follow the instructions, you usually...
Do we allow chemists at Maths Jam?
Up to and including chemists.
Oh, okay.
Someone made quite a strong complaint about that. We weren't sure whether they...
A real complaint, or a...
Our tech guy is actually a chemist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the guy who's doing
Mike.
Who did a fantastic job, Mike Wharton. He did a marvellous job on our technical work, because James normally does the technical stuff. And
I haven't seen James around much this time.
No, oddly enough.
didn't bother coming along.
You weren't listening earlier, were you? Yeah. No, you just don't. Yeah. we had Mike do the technical stuff.
Job.
He did a fantastic job at that. But he's a chemist, so...
Because the trouble with maths is, often it requires a lot of background knowledge and a lot of terminology, and it's very easy. And people feel very nervous coming along to Maths Jam things, because they think, well, what if I don't know enough maths, I might get excluded? And so we are adamant that it's as open, as friendly as possible. And so in a very tongue-in-cheek way, we say we accept absolutely anyone, up to and including chemists. And then occasionally chemists take that personally, because they're an emotional bunch of chemists. Mm-hmm.
I think it's one thing that's definitely good about it, because there are people here from from professors and PhDs in maths, all the way down to just hobbyists who find it intriguing as a side distraction. And various people that have also been dragged along and found it so much fun that they just couldn't help but come back. And it's kind of...
impossible to be cynical here as well. If someone stands up and says, I'm going to tell you about something that you heard about 10 years ago and is completely trivial, but then they stand up and they talk about it and you go, oh, that's really nice.
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting, actually.
I mean, because the sole criterion for doing a 5-minute talk or something is that you think it's interesting. And everyone else doesn't have to agree with you, but people's enthusiasm is what carries it. Mm.
Back to the baking. Those numbers.
The important question. Yeah.
What were those numbers? Were they all special numbers?
They were randomly generated numbers. I think I tried to use random.org, but it wouldn't let me specify a range, so I had to find a different random number.
So how'd you do it?
I just went to a random number generating website that let me specify between two values, and then it just gave me...
You didn't use Python?
I could have. I didn't feel like programming, so I just found a website. But yeah, I generated 4-digit random numbers, assigned them to each cake as they came in, and then gave the judges a list of those numbers instead of a list of names. And it worked, I think, because a couple of the judges did, when we picked out the judges, which we also did randomly from the set of delegates,
random source
minus
on the
set of people who baked things.
Now, I used Python for that.
Right, that was done using Python. But the a couple of them said, oh, well, you know, the person that I've come with has entered a cake, so obviously I know which one that is. And I said, you know, keep it. You know, keep your judging fair and be as fair and generous as possible. I don't think none of the cakes that were made by people who were friends of the judges won. So,
okay.
So I'm assuming either they were slightly biased against those in
or
order to not look like
them,
they were biased, or...
Which was your one? You baked.
I did Mobius Brandy Snaps.
Mobius Brandy Snaps.
I took a thing that's traditionally quite difficult and technical to make
and tried
to make a harder version of it. Yeah. But we mainly left them in the oven slightly too long and then burned our fingers trying to fold them into Mobius bands and then they snapped. But we ended up with a few good brandy snap Mobius bands and a big pile of crunchy bits of delicious brandy snap that people could also eat. So we put those out as well.
That's a win-win.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's tragedy.
Yeah. So
because I made the self-supporting arch, a catenary arch thing. I spent ages doing the calculations for all the different blocks, and suddenly I realised that the resolution you get in cake isn't all that great. And so I then went, you know, screw it. And so I just roughly worked out the sizes, and then it held together for most of the competition.
Yeah, it did.
There was one failure. It did fall.
Like when you first set it up.
But that didn't affect the overall deliciousness.
Yeah,
of
well,
the cake.
That's what matters.
So I reassembled it.
But no, we had all sorts. We had the winner of Best Maths was some topological pretzels made in.
They were
the
amazing.
The
knot theory.
Nuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which were also delicious.
Including
as well.
The un-pretzel.
Yeah, the un-pretzel was there. And then, yeah, we also had... I mean, we had a cake of Maths in the Simpsons, which was really nicely made with, like, a little Homer Simpson on it.
Well, it was like it was the episode where Homer goes 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't made of cake, though.
It's the first time I've seen a sign that says, please do not eat Homer's head.
Yeah.
It contains raw pasta.
Yeah. And yeah, we had, I mean, there were sort of various standard shaped cakes that were decorated like Maths things. So it was like a solitaire cake with Maltesers on instead of marbles.
That was good.
It was a Towser Hanoi.
It was a Towser
Hanoi.
Yeah,
cake, which
it was the full set
of
set.
Yeah, there was a full, 81 cakes in the shape of each of the cards of the game set, which was, I think, she described it as what am I trying to say?
Quantity
over
quality.
But they were really nice lemon cakes.
They
were
delicious.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that intrigued me about that is that during the evening, people actually played set with these things. They're cakes, people. Understand? You're supposed to eat them.
No, but if you got a set, you got to eat.
So
I went over and stayed long enough to find a set.
Right.
Which I could go eat.
Right, okay. I missed that.
That seems like a fair way of distributing cake, actually.
You got to earn your set.
The people who are good at set get to eat the cake.
Yeah.
I guess there's a limit on how many cakes you can eat as one person, so you'd probably
give up
and wander off after a while.
There were plenty of people waiting to join the game, though. Wasn't
If you insist that you have to start eating your cake as soon as you've won your set, then you can't say set.
That's true.
You've got to hoard the cake.
Yeah.
Do we feel that's enough about baking?
I think we have talked about baking it. This is like the pancake podcast.
But I think we're going to do it again, right? We're going to next
Mass
Jam.
I mean, someone did come over to me and say, I feel like maybe we've had all of the possible Like, this has run its course now. And I was like,
there's
what?
A finite
no.
set of cakes that involve
no, well,
maths.
What I think is that a lot of people, I mean, a couple of the talks after that then inspired ideas for cakes okay. that I mentioned to people.
Well,
but,
I had two ideas for my cake, and no one else did my second plan. Yeah. The next
so
year,
what was that,
I'm well.
But one thing I think about it is with this type of thing, the barrier to entry is just that you don't know what is happening with it. Like, you're not completely sure of what level is required and what level
yeah,
of skill.
Yeah, yeah. People have seen the case.
It's like
yeah.
a Math Jam talk. When people come here for the first time, they've got no idea what a Math Jam talk is supposed
exactly.
to be.
Exactly, and they see it.
So most people come...
Could people volunteer halfway through to
yeah,
do a talk?
Most people who come for the first time don't offer a talk, because I think, you know, I'm completely out of my league, and so on. And all you need is something that you think is interesting. And the people who already know it will be able to share with you. And the people who don't know it, there you are.
It's
learned something new.
It's probably true that if you're coming to the Math Jam conference, that you have in your life spent 5 minutes telling someone about something interesting.
Yeah, it's a pretty safe assumption.
Interesting theme that seemed to keep popping up again and again and again was Route 2.
Route 2 is very popular.
Route 2
is
yeah. very hot this
year. It was the year of Route 2.
This was the year of... There was a lovely, lovely paper folding proof that Route 2 is irrational, which is... very nearly the geometric proof that I didn't actually give in the end.
So there was a proof you didn't do.
There was a proof I didn't
folding proof someone else did.
Well, there was two proofs I didn't do, and
David Bedford did the one.
And somebody else did the other one. I can't remember who it was. And then...
someone proved it was rational.
Julia Collins actually popped up and showed that the nth root of 2...
That was nice.
That was lovely, for n greater than 2. And then somebody else, what were you just going to say?
Someone proved that root 2 is
root
rational.
Two, yeah, somebody proved that root 2 is
just
rational.
Just for balance.
For balance, absolutely.
Exactly. You've got to represent both sides of the debate.
Yeah, like the BBC.
Teach the controversy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely the conference of root 2. We wonder what will happen next year, whether it be root 3.
Pi.
E to the pi.
Pi.
Yeah.
Pi. Mathematicians sitting around the table just reciting conflict.
Reciting conflict.
Ah, good.
Walked in just then.
Route 7. I tried to start a new thing, which was bringing a maths-based mug. Alright, because I thought it would be great if everyone brought maths-themed mugs. I haven't mentioned this before to anyone. Along to the conference, right? Because then we hear like a mass mug thing. Okay, I'm getting a lot of blank expressions here.
A mug off?
Yeah. Mm. We need a better name
yeah,
for
I
it.
Mean,
yeah,
of the various mugs that I own, several of them are maths.
I think
mugs,
a lot of people will have.
Oddly
have
enough,
you got a maths mug at home?
I've got three.
See, are you a maths mug?
I'm not a mugs person.
Not a mug? You don't drink heated beverages?
I drink hot chocolate, for which I have one plain grey mug.
Wow, don't you live the whole rainbow of life? Right, so
discipline.
Okay, right.
I'm a plates mug. I've got four plates that have each have an animal on. It's got all the cuts marked on.
Okay, that's a start. Right. But I suspect, in my little survey here, 75% of mathematicians have maths mugs at home, right, often spare, so people can start bringing along their favourite maths mug. Although the risk we discovered was one I brought this year. At night, they replenished the glasses and things, and someone actually took my mug away with the other generic mugs to be washed downstairs, which was a lovely thing to do. But then they neglected to bring it back, which would have made it an even more lovely gesture. So I had to go find it in the kitchen downstairs. But that's my suggestion for a thing next year.
My favourite maths mug is one that my mum bought me because she saw it and assumed that since I like maths, I would like this object. And it's just covered in numbers in that sort of stencil font that you see on a lot of things. Just a whole thing is just solid with numbers and the letter H. Just one letter in all of numbers. I know she didn't see that and go, oh, that's hilarious, I'll buy it. She just thought, oh, it's got numbers on. But when I got it, it's got all the digits.
It's not like a not equals?
No, it's definitely an H on its side at the bottom.
Is it a capital or a letter?
Capital H, yeah.
Not equals.
Well, it could be, but it definitely
but
looks
it's
like...
it's the only symbol in a
monster. Yeah,
is there...
I think it's either someone wasn't thinking hard enough or... someone making a personal joke.
Or maybe it's a random assortment of letters and digits, and you got the one statistical freak mug, which was almost entirely digits. What a gift from your mum.
There's
a mug is different.
It's like a giant typewriter with a monkey on it. And the mug's just passed. Okay.
Yeah.
I've just thought of a name for you. You know, when the popular media does a maths thing, they always have like this, all these numbers swirling around.
Yeah,
an equation will float past. Could call that cumulo numbers. Oh,
nice.
No, it's not nice.
We tried because we did an article about for the aperiodical about the press coverage of the Mersenne Prime discovery, and we needed a picture to illustrate this article. So I just got some ones and zeros in green on a black background and distorted the image, and then put a bit of a sweep of colour across it, and then a bit of lens flare on it, and we captioned it "Some maths being pictured as difficult to represent in picture form," because they always do that. I like that cumulonimbus. I feel like because we've not got a huge amount of time left. In the time we have remaining, it's probably worth mentioning that Maths Jam is also not a conference; it's also another thing as well.
Correct. No. Okay. Right. Yes. So that was technically a question, I guess. Then so we had the Maths Jam conference, which, oh, by the way, is organised by Colin. He's hugely responsible. Him and a lot of automated scripts he's written. And he puts a huge amount of effort into bringing
how to replace yourself with a small Python script.
Well, exactly. You're gradually outsourcing yourself to a computer. And then the monthly Maths Jams are organized and run by Katie Steckles, who puts it and any scripts. Do you even automate any steps then, have you?
I tend to do most stuff by hand.
The website can tell if you're coming from the US or the UK,
and
switches between Maths Jam and Math Jam, both the URL and the logo, which is quite that's a nice bit. Yeah, so the monthly ones, people get together in a pub, and the second last Tuesday of each month, and do maths.
The second last Tuesday. The penultimate
Tuesday of the month. We tried a few other things in the early days. We tried the first prime day in the so from the beginning of the year, if you number all the days 1 to 60, whatever. Then the first prime one of them, but that was terrible. People couldn't be bothered working. We went when it was and all this stuff. And those people there on the 1st of January going, well, this is perfectly acceptable. And people, so anyway, then eventually we thought the second last Tuesday is nice because it comes in and out of phase with other things that occur on like the 3rd or the 4th. So it's not static in the month. And we do them all simultaneous because people swap puzzles. We do them simultaneously.
Lee. Yes. You said simultaneous.
Well, I hadn't finished the sentence.
Simultaneous.
So we do simultaneous equations at the simultaneously held math jams because people swap puzzles and often pedantic corrections amongst each other as they're going on. So and they occur. How many are there now? 31.
Mm. Oh, it's a lovely number.
Yeah, we had. There were a few that were existing math jams but have gone on hiatus because the organizer's either moved away or is too busy to carry on. And for those ones, we've got a sign up on the website that says if you want to take over, let us know. But yeah there's
math jam for good
maybe
home.
Four that are in that status.
Okay.
That have told me. There may be others that haven't told me that are in that status, but we'll see. But yeah, there are 31 existing ones, of which about 25 are in the UK.
They're fairly straightforward to run. They're basically you tell people it's on. You turn up at the pub, and
you've defined a pub that works.
Kind of it.
You find a pub that doesn't mind you filling half a pub with people, which most pubs don't. It turns out
they're quite like people coming in and buying drinks. The hardest part's getting at the momentum. So if you do start a Maths Jam for the first month or two, you need a few other friends who will come with you, and you may be a couple of you in the pub for a while until gradually word of mouth spreads and more people start showing up.
Yeah, the first couple of Newcastle Maths Jams were just three of us in not a good pub. But we all enjoyed it so much that we came back.
You kept showing up,
a couple of times. And then eventually a few more people arrived at once.
Last time I was at the Newcastle Maths Jam, there must have been
10
people.
Every time you come, there's a record turnout. I don't announce that you're coming, so I don't know how people find out.
I only show up if I know it's going to be good attendance. That's how it works.
Yeah, it varies. I think we worked out the average is about 7-ish across the maths jams. This was an average calculated using very sporadic survey data that was voluntarily given. But yeah, the sort of the big one in London, I guess, can get as many as sort of 20 or 30, depending on the time of year and the other ones.
It varies heavily when universities.
Yeah,
and
universities
people are around.
Yeah. But I guess because some of them are in cities like Manchester and Birmingham, but some of them are in. So there's one in East Dorset which is just held in a pub that's fairly central to the region, because then everyone can sort of get there from wherever they live, and that's a bit smaller, but they still jam.
While we're talking about the monthly differences, the September Maths Jam is a glorious Maths Jam. When everyone's back off their summer holidays, the teachers are all getting keen.
They're still young and enthusiastic.
Yeah, we have something like 12 people at Newcastle.
Oh, wow.
Jam,
Ron,
happens to be quite significant.
Yeah. Oh, actually, yeah. Our normal table had been booked out by Lloyd's Bank because after they got split up, they bought a load of sandwiches for their customers who didn't turn up. So we were stuck in this little table in the corner of the pub.
Next to a big empty table with free sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly. And we were the ones that could do maths right. It wasn't fair.
Yeah.
No, well, our pub's quite nice because we get 10% off for being Maths Jam. I guess not specifically Maths Jam, but because we regularly fill a table with people,
you get 10% off.
They have a little stamp you can stamp our hands with that says we're with Maths Jam. And it doesn't say Maths Jam, it says the name of the pub. But we can always grab that when we arrive, which is interesting because when new people come, they get a drink and they come and join us and we're like, oh, you could have had 10% off that drink. Oh, never mind.
Well, we lost our pub in London. Jamie Oliver bought it and was converting it to a restaurant. So I don't know how it was still there. It was this great, very quiet pub in just north of Piccadilly Circus. And then finally someone realised it was worth more money. And so we've been moved. We're now in Holborn.
Yeah, it was lovely because it was sort of a theatre landish pub.
Yeah.
People would go there before the theatre for
and then
quiet,
all clear
drink,
out.
Dinner. Then all disappeared just about the time when Maths Jam was about to start.
Yeah.
So it worked really well.
Yeah, the pub, everyone used to clear out by 7:30 for all the shows that were on. And so we just mill around for the first half an hour and then we get the tables after that.
So I wanted to hear from both of you, where did the name Maths Jam first start? Because you're both separate entities.
Yeah, it was Matt. I mean, we were looking at the idea of having this annual gathering.
Yeah.
And that was independent. And I came and talked to Matt and James and a couple of other people about trying to convince me not to do it, to try and think of ideas.
We couldn't find a good reason to stop you.
And did you all meet each other? Did you all do outreach talks?
Yeah, we all go out and do...
Yeah, we met on the math circuit.
Yeah.
The math circuit.
And then when we were going to organise this gathering, so we had to have a name.
And I said, I run this thing in London called... At the moment, at the time, there's only one monthly Maths Jam. It was just the London
just
one.
Just the London one.
And I said, I run this thing in London called Maths Jam. I think it's quite a cool name. Should we use that?
Yeah, and we brainstormed around. We thought of lots and lots of other names, none of which really stuck. A few of which I still think were good ideas, but often people didn't get the idea or whatever. And the idea of Maths Jam actually stuck because, you get musicians who get together and jam. And that's kind of what we're doing.
Yes,
we're getting
it's together the and lack of organisation inherent. In
yes.
Yeah.
And the creative contributions, the lack of formal structure, but at the same time the creativity that you get with everybody joining in with their own components, which then comes together.
And I first got the name. Actually, I don't think I've ever put this on the record. A friend of mine who's a web designer was at some web conference and they had a sign thing and they called it something like Web Jam or something. It was just this thing and he mentioned it. I went, actually, that's a nice way to describe that sort of thing. And so when I wanted to name the London gathering, I thought, Maths Jam, that's a good name, then we're on.
I think the name works well to deflect the mockery away from, you're going to do fun maths in a pub, towards the name. Everyone I've told about it.
Yeah.
Next time I talk to them, they say, how was Maths Condiment?
Maths
Preserve. So what did you find out?
Yeah.
And then they go, what's the cool maths? I don't know whether these people are predisposed to enjoy the concept of fun maths.
No. It does, I mean.
It's a nice name.
Yeah, it's a nice name. And we get a nice bunch of people. Mm. This is one of the things. I mean, going back to the first thing, the reason it works is because of the bunch of people who insist on sharing what they have or are happy to share what they know and are happy to be shown new stuff and explore new stuff. It's the people who make it work. All we do is give them the space to have it happen.
So I think that's it.
Yeah, we've probably covered everything. So if you want to find out more about Maths Jam, there is a website at mathsjam.com or math-jam.com if you're in America.
Wait, did someone have it without that?
Someone had it without the hyphen.
Yeah, someone.
And they're not doing anything with it. And so
that's the thing. Last night I googled buffalo, or whatever.
Yeah.
.com and someone wants $2,500 for it.
What?
Yeah. But math-jam.com.
Math-jam
or mathsjam.
It's like it's at the S. There's a dash.
Yeah.
There's how. Yeah.
And we're on Twitter at mathsjam. We'll also try and put all of the slides from this weekend up on the website too, for people to check them out. Otherwise just find a maths jam near you and turn up to the right pub on the right evening and bring a Rubik's Cube or something. or a mug.
I'm just saying, the mugs would catch on.
No, people do bring cake to our monthly Mass Jam as well.
Really?
Cool. Yeah, so Sam, who baked 81 set cakes, the first Mass Jam she came to, she made cake pops and brought them on, just put them on the table. We were like, what's this now? Oh, good, you can stay. And yeah, she regularly bakes things and brings it to Mass Jam.
I feel like maybe she just produces them by unnatural means and just offloading them on Mass Jam.
No, that would be an unnatural means.
Yeah. We should trade people from Mass Jams. We could borrow her
from
Well, we
stole one from Newcastle. A guy who went to Newcastle.
There was a big money transfer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, someone who was a regular at Newcastle Mass Jam started a PhD in Manchester and moved down to Manchester.
And just now we've transferred. Got
him. Yeah, nice. Also we're losing someone to Cambridge. So a guy who is involved with lots of Raspberry Pi stuff has just got a job in Cambridge.
Cambridge used to be part of the London map. The trouble with London is it will start growing from people from peripheral areas until they get buoyant and they just separate off.
Yeah.
So the Cambridge one budded off the London one.
So we're going to lose him to Cambridge Maths Jam. But the good thing about it is that he knows when he gets there, there'll be a Maths Jam he can go to.
That's
a nice thing about it. Any city you live in or any place you can go to, you can find a Maths Jam nearby.
And on that note, I think we'll end.
Yes.
Thank you, Colin and Matt.
It's a pleasure.
Our pleasure.
And now it's time to close the bracket, and that's all squared.
They actually mime that.